On today's show, EU clamping down on AI or trying to, it could have huge implications. And is UK still part of EU? Welcome to the AI Business Podcast. This is episode 26. We've made it this far. This is somewhere in April. We won't tell you when because we publish on a different day and Max never keep up the proper publication date. So it's all pointless. I'm the host and video producer of Informa Tech, Tian Fu. And joining me as always is the man who is very ready for show and tell. He has three pair of gloves, each for different reasons. We won't get into it. He's the deputy editor of DCD, Sebastian Moss.
Hello, everybody, and look at my axe. Look at this. Look at that beautiful.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, look at that.
Oh, no.
Beautiful Kara Swango. You weren't expecting that. Wonderful. It's got moose bone at the end, reindeer antler, wonderful heft. I have destroyed many things this weekend. I've only drawn a tiny bit of my blood, so I'm in a good mood.
Did you actually hurt yourself?
Only a little, little thumb. Thumb mash, very small. That's why I got, this is the different gloves. This is my new special gloves for not getting cut.
Well, for the avoidance of doubts, Sebastian is a prepper, so this is why he needs the axe. It's not any murdering.
Yeah, let's go with that.
As always, maximal axe.
Hello there, certainly not Sebastian Moss, even though we look alike. So I've got two things. I've got The Rock DVD, because as we just talked with the guys, The Rock is probably the best film ever made. If you haven't seen The Rock, watch it. It's a masterpiece of 90s film, and lots of Dutch angles and beautiful Sean Connery and of course Nicolas Cage. But another thing, it's just like, if you followed the podcast for a little bit, you might have noticed that I have sort of like this weird ghostly presence in the background sometimes, and his name is Gonzo. He is the mascot of AI Business, and he looks like this
and is Gonzo. Listeners, that's a cat. It's intense. That's not just a person he's got chained up.
Our poor audio listeners.
he's black and he's hairy.
So are you still talking about the cat? it's for audio listeners. And of course, you know him from two episodes prior, chugging Dr. Pepper. He's got a California Republic. The state of California has flag behind you. Wait, but it's like two doors. It's like two bears. That's not really California.
That's the new California Republic from Fallout New Vegas. It has confused many a people.
Is that a Pokemon? Is that a Pikachu?
Yeah, that is a Pikachu and an IKEA shark. Well, I take it off the bed every night. I don't leave it on. It's only for show.
I'll just try to believe you. That's true, but I don't really believe you.
All right, wait. But what's the actual artifact that you're wearing?
Oh, I am wearing my new Bernie t-shirt.
New Bernie t-shirt?
It is a new Bernie t-shirt. It has no respectable year on it, so no DNC can snatch away my hopes and dreams.
Now, here's the thing. Now I came in last because I also have a... Now, you Bernie bandwagon people who join in later. This is Bernie mug 2016. And I also got something different that I want to show because we're talking about movies. This is from a Secret Angel gift last year and made by a girl named Tong Yi. So she creeped on all my, and she made like 20 posters with my face on it. So this is They Shall Not Grow Old, the Peter Jackson documentary on World War One. You can find me in one of them. This is the custom made, and she actually made like 20 of them, but I only found two in my drawer. She's actually an architect and she's really good at, surprisingly good at Photoshop. EU trying to make laws, trying to regulate AI and its usage, which, if you follow this show, we often talk about how lack thereof, there's just pretty much no rules, kind of free fall off in the US because the invisible market hand and capitalism, according to our former president, 43, it's the best thing ever invented by anybody. So there's been very little rules and it's working out great, you know. Depends on how you look at it. but the EU doesn't think so. So they are looking ahead and they're like, hey, we have this responsibility being, I guess, the most progressive establishment in the world and that people actually listen to and care about. So they're trying to get ahead and say, hey, we're seeing a trend. How can we prevent AI infringing on human rights, infringing on basic human liberty? So this can be something that potentially can go to law, but it requires a lot of conversation, which is what we're going to do now to kind of break down a little bit on what it entails.
So this has been kind of been touted for a while now. They said they're going to release, the commission rather, not just they, said they're going to release this sometime in mid-April this year. The draft regulation specifically states that AI systems that are being operated and sold in the block of the EU27 need to be categorized in terms of trustworthiness. So basically, there are four categories, the highest being unacceptable risk, and the lowest being no risk, and basically it just determines the level of scrutiny they need. So if your product comes under unacceptable risk, it's deemed a clear threat to safety and the rights of citizens and will pretty much be banned. And the most interesting thing that I picked out of it was the banning of, or near total banning of, remote biometric identification systems. It was deemed high risk, so not unacceptable. But law enforcement agencies will not be allowed to use them in publicly accessible spaces, which could be pretty huge. So obviously, this has only just been dropped today. It's going to take a bit of time. It's still got to go through Parliament, and member states have still got to ratify it. Obviously, the UK no longer one of them, so this will not apply to the UK. And obviously, member states will also need to make any national legislative changes in order to fully comply, should it come to fruition.
You gave us an example of high risk. What else falls into a high risk category? Which, if I understand correctly, means that there could be use cases, but most of the time, there are very few exceptions allowed.
Let's pick that example that we spoke about, the biometric identification. They specifically mentioned in the announcement that a certain exception would be in the case of a missing child, preventing potentially, they say, specific and imminent terrorist threats, or, you know, searching for serious criminals. But the interesting thing is such exceptions require authorization from judges or an independent body. So even if they want to use this, they still have to go through the process of, you know, searching for this. They can't just say, okay, we need to stop this terrorist threat, let's just use it, you know, because that could potentially, the interesting thing is, you know, infringing the rights of EU citizens. You know, you can't just dictate to them, okay, this is going to be good for you. I think the other interesting thing was the example that manipulation to human behaviors is deemed a high and or unacceptable risk. So something that circumvents a user's free will, or social scoring, which, you know, that's kind of, you know, obviously expected, you know, that's what you want for your freedom of rights. But it's kind of the EU confirming, okay, this is not something we're going to do in the long run.
Yeah, this is interesting. Yeah, because it instantly makes illegal the sort of like the Chinese approach to social scoring, which is like, you know, has many people worried, you know, like these systems, you know, like they build up on existing systems like credit risk scoring and just expand them. And right now, you know, like according to the draft, thank God, that's not going to happen in Europe.
So where would credit risk scoring, AI-based credit risk scoring, come on something like this? That's the question. There's a lot of existing stuff that I think could fall under this. Even we're just talking about manipulating human behavior, that's advertising.
Exactly. No, because it's just like, yeah, things like chatbots, they automatically they do fall under the low risk category, and there's a bunch of technologies. I think most AI technologies on the market will kind of sell through without any issues. But I like the gradation, you know, like this realization that not all AI systems are created equal. And okay, maybe not on day one, but like, you know, like they want to come to this understanding. Based on impact and criticality, you know, like if these systems are not good, you know, like it's really damaging. And if these systems are not good, well, I mean, your chatbot is gonna be unable to answer your query. That's you know.
And the thing is, it's not just obviously the restriction against countries, and they're ideally meant to go through kind of legal processes. But if you as a company circumvent these laws, if they do become laws, you could be fined 4% of your global revenue. So that's global and revenue. So that can be a lot of money if you're a Google type company. And if that's per infraction, and they can kind of find several infractions, that could quickly rack up into the billions.
The interesting thing, like you brought up the chatbots there, just, you know, for my own benefit, reading it through now. So the lower tiers, limited and minimal, chatbots come under that, where it says limited or no obligations. But like you said, okay, in the long term, how are we going to determine whether one specific chatbot is different from another? You'd have to do those tests quite rigorously. And I think the interesting thing is, in terms of actually going forward, something that might draw the line in terms of one of those applications, like a chatbot that might, you know, actually do more than another one, might come in by the time this law comes into fruition, because this plenary, there'll be at least 2 to 3 plenary votes. You know, it's got to go through commission, parliament, whatever.
The thing is, when you say two different chatbots, how do you tell them apart? What would scare me if this wasn't the EU, and it's still kind of worrying when it's the EU, is they want access to the source code, right? And say, yeah, it'll be confidential. We'll, you know, we won't share it. But, you know, Russia asked for the source code of tech companies. People freaked out. China's asked for the source code of tech companies and people freaked out. It's less scary when it's the EU, because obviously they're in a slightly more morally, you know, less gray area. But it's still always a concerning thing when you have a government body saying, hand over your source code so we can look at it. And to ensure that itself doesn't then get manipulated by intelligence services is something that, you know, I do not trust intelligence services one bit. If they can circumvent something like this, like it could still happen. The Bundesnachrichtendienst, the German version of like GCHQ and NSA, you know, they're legally not meant to spy on their own people. The EU has laws against this already, but they do it. It's happening. It's happening right now. They do it. People say you shouldn't be doing that. It still happens. You know, in the UK, when we were part of the EU, back in 2000, we passed Section 44 powers. So this is pre-9/11, pre the terrorist attacks here. We passed these powers that said, like, we can stop and search people in very designated little areas, you know, next to national monuments, tourist attractions, for very specific terrorist related reasons. And then since then, and it could only last for 28 days, the police go, we want this area. Court says, yes, you can have that area for 28 days. They've done that non-stop since 2001.
And now everybody gets stopped and searched. Like, literally, you've lost your rights. Yeah.
Well, in New York City, the big thing was stop and frisk, where police are allowed to stop anybody. This is during Bloomberg years, in which he's apologized over and over during a campaign in 19 and 20, because people, and he kept saying it works. Now, Detroit is one of the cities being highly covered by cameras and AI, you know, tracking those faces. And the police said, well, we don't do that for no reason. But when we need to track down a criminal, and there's no limit, obviously, for them, it's
there's
not
always
like,
a criminal.
There's always a criminal. Yeah, exactly. And they always use it.
You know, the EU had some really good, and it does have some really good kind of data protection rules. And then a pandemic comes along where you're like, well, we want to force people to install something on their phone that tracks them and lets us know who they've been interacting with. And that makes perfect sense because we need to see where this virus goes. And that took a long time for that to work out. How do we make that work with our data laws? So we see that with technology. How do you make regulations and law flexible and quick in a fast-changing world and fast-changing technology without it then being abused by Facebook, by Google, or in a clear view?
Well, exactly, because I think, you know, like what governments are going to do with this or want doing with this regulation, you know, like governments are a totally different thing. Public sector, if there are judges signing off on this, you know, like that's some oversight. I think the primary reason this was designed and the primary reason we talk about it is because the private sector needs to be stopped. You know, like these are the fines and these are the rules that are there to stop, you know, like, for example, your bank from spying on you, because risk-based assessments are something businesses are familiar with. When you say, well, we're going to review you based on risks and the potential impact, that's okay, fine. We do risk assessments for everything. Why shouldn't we have risk assessments for AI? And it's just like, okay, it's an exact science, and figuring out how you're going to do that risk assessment and what constitutes risk, yeah, you're right, there's gradations. But again, we have the four levels. Again, you tell a business, oh, you're in this tire. That means you need to do this, this, and this. There's a checklist. Again, is a language businesses understand.
The difficulty is we need to see how many fines. You know, GDPR is again, a great example of a relatively well-written, relatively thought-out process, but it hasn't completely overhauled how these companies operate. There's still a lot of GDPR violations going on every single day. Most of them just get away with it, or if they do get fined, it's cost of business. You know, Palantir could just get away. They can afford 4% of their global revenue to operate in the European market. I think there should be full-on bans. If you do this, then you're banned from government contracts in Europe. That'd be a much more effective way of making people pay attention.
Yeah. Well, the other thing we kind of alluded to earlier, that is the current ongoing battle between Facebook and Apple, which basically Apple just say in the latest update in 14.5 iOS, we're going to say, hey, these apps are tracking, you can turn on or off. And Facebook got really hot. And equally, just because Peter Thiel is not a fan makes you happy. If Zuckerberg is not a fan, that makes me happy. I'm like, okay.
Facebook versus Apple is like when Nazi Germany turned on the Soviet Union. You're like, yeah, they can both go at it. I'm not, you know, happy with either of them.
But the point is not like one is good versus the other one is bad. The point is when these companies go head to head with each other, they're going after their own benefits, because Facebook doesn't want Apple, because they're apparently their iMessage, their messaging app, is being a threat to all the Facebook's WhatsApp and Messenger and whatever. And Apple sees Facebook as a threat to their privacy clause. So when these companies go to, I feel like it's even more effective. Now everybody's suddenly aware, oh, right, these apps are tracking me all the time. And this, without the government even does anything, they're bringing this argument. Now this argument surface, and now they're going. The funny thing is seeing these companies, seeing Facebook putting on whole page ads, going, and it's like, we care about you, and this is about small business. It's like, no, when this battle surface, I see that even being equally, if not more effective than a law that may or may not protect us in the future. Now, I'm not arguing that, say, this company should just, when the industry regulates itself, that doesn't really.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah,
no, but also that we have reached a level where corporations just need to battle it between themselves, and the governments have no business kind of like, doing that.
Right. For what it's worth, it's at least enjoyable to watch. That's what I'm going to say. I'm not going to say it's working, but then it does make people aware. And I think for Apple's argument in saying like, well, if you want to be tracked, fine. But in the fact is they know nobody wants to be tracked, and they know they're screwing Facebook one way or the other. But then I'm just, as a consumer, which we all are, we're just like, okay, let's see what happens. So in some way, that's more immediate and effective in the short term.
Yeah, I mean, a Facebook versus Apple is always going to be more interesting for the consumer, because it's consumer brands who are constantly messaging to consumer publications and making sure it's a very consumer-based thing. Whereas the EU is an incredibly boring entity, because it's super bureaucracy. You know, this is a 108-page document that's going to go through tons of rewrites and various little chambers of EU, you know, ministerial politics and government politics and votes. It's interesting because a lot of this work on this current thing is being spearheaded by Margaret Vestager, who previously was best known for being like the European Union's champion against American big tech. So EU has the double-edged thing of they as a culture, Europeans generally care more about privacy, but then also as a culture, it's easier to be worried about a giant tech corporation if it's a foreign thing. And obviously here in Europe, it's mainly American corporations, and that adds an extra layer of, do I want this American corporation spying on me? You know, we weren't a big fan of all the things you've done in the past. Do we want you guys watching us? So she did find these companies, but again, realistically, her big campaign against big tech, has it made any significant change to those companies and how they operate?
Right. Wasn't her big thing, you know, clamping down on tax fraud? And
It was tax fraud. It was Google abusing its market dominance with its search engine. And, you know, the changes Google did to try and unbundle Android, it's still ongoing, but it, again, has not really made any difference to the way. But it doesn't go far enough. We can all see which pathway this way of corporate surveillance is bringing us, where it's going to end. You don't need to reference Black Mirror to kind of work out. It's quite obvious. And small slaps on the wrist won't change that.
I want to bring up the immigration aspect of this, because we talked about it off air in terms of how important the kind of immigration issue is in Europe, because, you know, it made a whole country leave the bloc. And whatever you feel about that, you know, it was a huge issue, but it's not just Britain. Italy and Spain have huge problems with immigration because people are crossing the Med and they're trying to push back on it. And you've got a lot of Italian ministers who are losing their minds over this issue. And they're probably wanting to, you know, maybe use some of these systems to process migrants who make it across. And the actual leaders of the commission have gone, actually, we don't want you to do that. And this is something that I'm thinking might actually cause some pushback when it goes to plenary, you know, whenever down the line.
for all we know, these kind of algorithmic systems are already out there and being tested, because that was the case for Clearview. Nobody was aware of the extent of government access, U.S. government access to Clearview until who did that massive investigation? It was Vice or Verge, one of those fancy
New York Times, I think.
Fashionable publications. New York Times. So, was it? Okay, less fashionable.
And then BuzzFeed did one as well.
Oh.
Right, so the underlying thing I'm spotting is that EU is big, and it's actually more complex than American things. And for the most part, to me, it looks like it's aspirational. And but then just because what you're saying, Max, too, where like just because it's aspirational doesn't mean it's bad. And when other people follow, that means it's not just aspirational anymore. It can be meaningful for people who will be affected by it potentially. So the best we can hope for is somebody trying to put up a draft, because somebody just need to do it first, and for the rest of us to look at it and pick, either you want to pick it apart or agree with it, but that's up to you to see what you want to do with it.
I think this is much better than, say, their efforts on cookies that has just made scrolling the internet an intensely frustrating experience. This looks better.
So the second part, this was announced last month, but it's obviously comes under this, was the newly unveiled machinery regulation, which replaces the old EU machinery directive. And in that new regulation contains provisions which ensure, quote, the safe integration of AI into machinery. Now, a lot of automation in factories and, you know, general business is already there, and it's, you know, already operating. But in order to comply with the regulation, businesses which use AI-capable machinery must conduct a single conformity assessment. So 3D printers, industrial production lines would be covered by this. And I just find that quite interesting, because how would the I don't understand how the assessment would work, and would those ones already using such devices then have to be assessed? Like, there wasn't much on that.
Okay, no. It's just like, it's things like visual inspection. But how do you, it's interesting to hear what they want the assessment to be. But automated visual inspection is widely deployed sort of like across production facilities already. It is powered by computer vision, and it's just like, it's one of the best use cases for AI in manufacturing going. So yeah, if this comes into force in a couple of years, there's gonna be they're going to create a whole new market for testing overnight. They're going to need a lot of people testing.
Welcome to AI business testing.
Have they defined what artificial intelligence is?
That's a very good question, because they have, but we got comment from some lawyers that essentially they criticize it as being too broad. The problem with the definition as it stands, they want to make it future-proof, so all the future developments in AI still fall under this banner. But the problem is, it kind of like, at the moment, it seems to include systems which are not traditionally considered AI, you know, like just like your standard business analytics systems, which is, we definitely don't want to regulate those. Those are working, those are fine.
I was just going to say, the idea of going around and testing, breaking down the door of a factory and pointing, I want to test this, this, and this, it kind of aligns with Vestager's, like, big company kind of shakedown, you know. We'll go into, like, a Siemens or a Bosch and just go, this, I'm testing this, you know, I'm going to do this. It just seems like an extension of that to me, and it's a bit difficult when you've got such a naff definition, I feel.
I think this idea of, you know, the EU going around and checking every single system might be incredibly inefficient. But even if there's the fear that they might do it, so they don't do it to the most of them, it's like a spot check. It's like a health and safety check at your restaurant or your shop. I think that could have some value.
I just want a man in blue overalls to knock on every factory door going, I'm here for testing, and then just testing. Just one man going around.
I want the whole Michelin experience, what apparently the Michelin sent like a couple to every restaurant, and they don't engage in any conversation. They just secretly sit there and order a meal, and they put a fork on the floor apparently, and if the waiter doesn't pick it up, they really they mark on their nose say like this restaurant is not qualified for Michelin standard. Yeah, so that's apparently I don't know how much of it.
It's like secret shoppers, but for right. fancy restaurants. You can be a Michelin man. Basically, it takes some qualifications, but you can be there reviewing food.
All woman.
We painted it as this, you know, US lax, Europe hard on America tech companies. But, you know, the FTC is doing an investigation to Facebook to potentially unwind WhatsApp and Instagram. It's probably not going to go anywhere. Probably America is going to be lax. But there is still a small pathway to an America that clamps down on these corporations like it clamped down on Mar-Bell back in the day, like, you know, Roosevelt did a long time ago. It can happen, and that would open up competition, it would open up innovation, and then when you have companies that aren't defending these business models that are all about mass aggregate data collection, and you say, look, clean slate, anyone can run for it, but here are the rules for privacy-focused technology, then new companies can come along and build upon that.
Right. I think people often use the example of when a government broke down AT&T into three different companies, you know, in I think late 90s. I could be wrong. I actually know people, friends who were laid off that day on the day off because there's police lineup. You know, whenever they break up a company, when the U.S. government deem you to be too big, you know you're way too big for the government to even look at you in that way. And unfortunately, that has not been done to any of the tech companies. And I think, Seb, you like to talk about the Obama years, right? He was close to all those people. And that's... Now the tides are turning. Now people are looking at them. There's a conversation to be had, and I think it's actually being had right now about whether to break up those companies. And
yeah, and I swear AT&T was broken up once before. So it's when it was the Bell Company, right?
Yeah, 1982 was the big breakup.
And then it grew too big again.
Was the actual
and they never up. Yeah, and they never fully recovered.
We talked about many, many kind of assumptions, what it's going to do or it's not going to do. But there is one thing that it's going to achieve 100%. And this is more AI specialists in public sector, because managing this process will be impossible. You know, like developing this strategy required, you know, like a lot of AI experts, kind of like ratifying it, putting it like through parliaments will require AI experts. Every single member state... They're essentially like local regulation agency, right? Whatever that ends to be named, will need AI specialists. And this is great. This is great because, again, EU has a head start on getting more AI specialists into public sector. And I think that is a beautiful, beautiful thing, because to get to grips with these systems, we need to know how they work. And you know, like your classic politicians, they're so far behind on this. We need new people. We need experts.
But the hard part is doing that without just getting what America has, which is the revolving door, where you go, who's the expert in Google's AI? Oh, this guy at Google. And then he's the whole time working there going like, boy, I can't wait to work at Google again.
Right. How hopeful are we? Let's just end this conversation on the barometer of hopefulness. Ben, from 1 to 10. How hopeful are you?
No, don't ask Ben. Ben has a Bernie shirt, you know? Don't ask him about hope and expectations.
He's young and hopeful. He hasn't been beaten by the world yet.
Oh, I've been beaten plenty of times. all I will say is, no matter what happens, I'm going to have to sit in tons of boring hearings for months on end about this.
Okay, so don't complain about it. Don't complain
at
about
least
your job.
You know what fate awaits you, yeah, because this is totally what you're doing, absolutely 100%.
Okay, Max, how hopeful are you?
I am hopeful because I generally respect EU as an institution, and I've seen what they've done with GDPR.
Sebastian?
I think this is going to be ignored by intelligence agencies and migrant agencies, but will have an effect on kind of top, you know, big corporations that are trying to win normal contracts, sell Microsoft Office at the same time. It's going to affect those guys. If you're a small Clearview type company, you've got nothing to lose by breaking the law or living in the gray area and then hoping that your intelligence agency friends fight the court cases for you. So it's good, but it's not as good as it could be.
Well, that's everything in life, so... Where can people find you, Ben? not hugging your Pikachu stuffed animal.
Yeah, no. you can find me on AIbusiness.com, and I'm also on Twitter at Ben Radecki. I also do tweet about my news, and I do tweet about Sasquatch, which is a Bigfoot who plays the saxophone, and I'd highly recommend anyone to go and check him out.
With his foot?
No, he dresses as Bigfoot and plays the saxophone, but he's just released a song. He's releasing a song with Billy Ray Cyrus.
Okay, I just don't even want to know your internet search history, Ben, with all the information you disclose about yourself. And Seb, when you're not axing somebody with your axe, what are you doing? Where can people find you?
You can find me axing
skinning any animals.
Yeah, you can find me in the woods, or you can find me on Twitter at Seb Moss. Or, and I found this hilarious. So, you know, in a previous episode, I spoke about how I wrote about the Capitol Hill attack in January, and I'm still getting hate mail. It's glorious. Got one the other day, and I'm just like, wow, these people have. They're bigger fans of my work than my family. So thank you for your love and attention.
That's yeah. How we share. I assume mostly from Americans who are passionate about.
Oh, completely Americans.
Oh, yeah. That's how we do it. Yeah.
You guys love me.
Did Frederick Brennan tell you who's Q yet?
Yeah, it's actually Max.
This is getting edited out. I don't want my secret identity revealed.
Max Molax is Q. Max Molax is Q.
And when you're not Q, when you're not doing Q drops, where can people find you, Max?
Yes, you can find me on AI Business on Twitter under Max Smolax. Pop something in my email and I promise I will give it a read, but don't pop it in twice or three times because that's what bad PRs do.
Yeah, they always do that. And they always, now they're very personalized. Like, hey Tian, you didn't respond to my last email. I'm like, oh yeah, this is important. Like, wait, who the heck is this?